Hello and welcome. You are listening to Patrick Boyle on Finance, a podcast exploring ideas from quantitative finance, examining events occurring in markets right now and financial history to see what lessons can be taken away, including interviews with some of the most interesting people in the world of finance. To learn more about the podcast, visit onfinance.org.
Neom the Line is a 170-kilometer long city being built in the deserts of Saudi Arabia that was supposed to cost $200 billion to build. It'll accommodate 9 million people in a massive structure that is 200 meters wide and 500 meters tall. It's conveniently located in an allegedly empty area of desert. The line has been pitched as a smart city, complete with extreme technology, including all of the modern features that you would want, like an artificial moon, robot dinosaurs, flying cars, human gene editing, and glow-in-the-dark sand, amongst many other attractions. According to a Wall Street Journal article about the project, this corner of Saudi Arabia is so barren that the only abundant resources that a group of consultants could identify were sunlight and unlimited access to salt water. Now, let's not be negative about this. Location is not the only consideration in a real estate project. I'm reliably told location is only one of the three important factors. There are at least two other important factors that need to be considered. Now, I won't lie, I'm a bit nervous about making this video, and I hope that nothing I say is viewed as criticism. I'm really just telling you the news about the scaling back of this obviously great project. You might be aware that things didn't work out very well for the last guy who questioned the wisdom of building a 170-kilometer long, 200-meter wide city in a previously overlooked prime location.
Neom project, this futuristic city that he is planning to invest $500 billion in it. What if it goes wrong? It could bankrupt the country.
But no one's allowed to criticize it.
But no one allowed to write an objective piece in any newspaper saying...
I might have to lie low for a while after this video is released, and obviously I won't be accepting any embassy invitations no matter how many Ferrero Rochers I'm offered.
The ambassador's receptions are noted in society for their host's exquisite taste.
Monsieur, Ferrero Rocher, you're really spoiling us.
Now, I know that I've mentioned this project in prior videos, and I hope that nothing from those videos will be misinterpreted as criticism. And if the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund hadn't blown the money on SoftBank, they would have blown it on Credit Suisse or Neom, the 110-mile-long city that they're building, which guarantees that inhabitants are always the maximum distance from wherever they need to go at any point in time. Oh, okay, yeah, so that could sound like criticism, but I'm not even sure if that was even me. It might have been made using AI. I don't really even cover topics like that on this channel. My videos, as regular viewers know, are mostly about rap and rapping, with my goal being to be the number one crypto nerd gangster rap channel. But sometimes I do get distracted by other topics. But anyhow, Bloomberg reported this week that Saudi Arabia is scaling back its medium-term ambitions for Neom the Line. They say that the pullback comes as the kingdom's sovereign wealth fund has yet to approve Neom's 2024 budget, and that the financial realities of the trillions of dollars of investment are starting to cause concern at the highest levels of the Saudi government as it tries to fulfill its ambitious Vision 2030 program to diversify the kingdom's economy away from fossil fuels. Bloomberg reports that the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund's cash reserves have fallen to $15 billion as of September, the lowest level since 2020. The Line City, according to the latest reports, is now only expected to extend 2.4 kilometres and house 300,000 people by the end of the decade. This is a 98.6% reduction from the initial plans, so it's still going ahead. It'll just be a little bit smaller than had been hoped for. While building an unusually densely populated 170-kilometre long city that's as tall as some of the tallest buildings in the world in what is described as a harsh, dry desert with great temperature extremes strikes me as a great idea, other people have not been as positive about these plans. In 2017, King Salman reshuffled Saudi Arabia's succession order, replacing his nephew, who had been the first in line to the throne, with his son, Prince Mohammed, who's known as MBS, which long-term viewers of this channel will know stands for mortgage-backed securities, but which also stands for Mohammed bin Salman, so it'll be one of those. 4 months after his appointment, MBS unveiled his plans for NEOM. The word NEOM is an amalgamation of the ancient Greek word for new and the Arabic word for future. The project is being overseen and financed by the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund, which the Crown Prince also chairs. It was pitched as costing $200 billion, but upon reflection might cost a bit more than that. Last month, a construction update was released on the NEOM YouTube channel.
One of the most ambitious projects the world has ever seen is progressing rapidly.
The first phase of the line will be complete by 2030. We are committed.
Representing the world's biggest earthworks operation, work continues around the clock. Millions of cubic meters of earth and water are being moved per week.
We've done a lot of the foundation work, literally and figuratively. We are ready to go.
Some people would say that a lot of that construction work looked like CGI, but not me. It looked very realistic to me. And the man in the video said that a lot of the foundation work has been done literally and figuratively. And there's no reason to believe that he would mislead us. It's definitely been done both literally and figuratively. It's good to hear that a lot of work has been done, as people are scheduled to move in any day now.
So back to your question, when will people go there and live? I would say early 24, we will have accommodations built for a good number, and hospitality, hotels, so we can attract tourists, and of course airport, so we can have our airport where people can live. All of this. First quarter of 24 will be the first milestone we want to meet.
Now look, a lot of people have commented on the shape of the city, which is quite unusual. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other cities that are 170 kilometres long while only 200 metres wide and 500 metres tall. In fact, I struggle to think of any cities that are taller than they are wide. Historically, skyscrapers have been built in very dense urban locations where the price of land is so high that it makes economic sense to build upwards to minimize the cost of the land per total floor area of a building. But you can also build them in an area so barren that the only abundant natural resources are sunlight and unlimited access to salt water, as who are we to criticise the judgment of a crown prince who was likely appointed by God? There are experts in urban planning, or heretics as I like to call them, who study the shape of cities. I found a paper by Brinkley and Raj which explains that in open systems, perfusion guides form and growth. They explain that ecosystems grow as fractals with new branches sprouting in order to maximize perfusion and resource uptake. They go on to explain that most cities grow as fractals, branching out, maximizing the urban interface with available fuel and arable land. They argue that cities are like cells suspended in a growth medium, the growth medium being arable land, and the urban fabric grows to maximize perfusion. Now, all of these points make sense if you're building a city somewhere near things like water, arable land, or any other resources necessary for human life. But it's my considered judgment that when building in an inhospitable environment like a desert or the surface of a distant planet, the longer and taller a city is, the better. So while most cities are circular because they grow to interact with food, water, trade and commerce, MBS came up with a long, narrow and very tall city in an inhospitable part of the world, and that's probably also a very good idea. In fact, it definitely is. If you think about it, if the first building is in a questionable location, it makes sense for the one next to it to be a bit away from that location, and the city would then naturally form a line as it tries to get away from itself. Now, the argument has been made by possibly someone impersonating me using AI, that a long, narrow city guarantees that inhabitants are always the maximum distance from wherever they need to go. But the designers of the line do have a solution for that problem.
The line's infrastructure makes it possible to travel end to end in 20 minutes with no need for cars, resulting in zero carbon emissions.
Now, this train system is very impressive. To travel 170 kilometres in 20 minutes, you'd have to be travelling at 510 kilometres per hour, which is a bit faster than the world's fastest train. Of course, 510 kilometres per hour assumes no stops along the way, which might be a bit inconvenient for people who live near the middle of the city. London Underground stations and New York subway stations are usually about a quarter of a mile apart from each other. 170 kilometres is 105.6 miles, so the line would need 412 train stops along the way. Subway trains usually stop and open their doors for at least 30 seconds at each station. So with 412 stations, the train would be stopped for 206 minutes, allowing people to get on and off the train at the stations. 206 minutes is, of course, a bit more than 20 minutes. So people would need to get on and off the trains a bit quicker than that. If the train stopped for just 2 seconds at each station, the train would only be stopped for 14 minutes, leaving us with 6 minutes to travel 170 kilometres. So we would just have to travel at 1,700 kilometres per hour, which is a bit over 1,000 miles per hour. 1,000 miles per hour would, of course, be an average speed. There would have to be a lot of extreme acceleration and deceleration going on, meaning that the top speed would have to be well over 1,000 miles per hour. You'd have 2 seconds to get on or off a train that would quickly accelerate up to, let's say, 3 times the speed of sound before slamming on its brakes for the next station.
And when you lose blood pressure to your head, you could even lose consciousness, and we term that G-induced loss of consciousness, or G-lock.
I won't lie to you, it sounds a little bit stressful to me. You'd have to get your seatbelt on rather quickly. Now, what could possibly go that fast? Oh yeah, of course, Elon Musk's Hyperloop. In 2020, it was announced that Hyperloop One had partnered with NEOM.
It's like a tube with an air hockey table. I swear, it's not that hard.
Oh, but hold on. It was just announced a few months ago that Hyperloop One is actually shutting down. That's probably what's holding things up at NEOM. I'm sure, though, that someone else could build one. It can't be that hard.
It's like a tube with an air hockey table. I swear, it's not that hard.
In truth, it doesn't really matter to me. I'd probably get about in one of those autonomous flying cars that they show in the video. That's basically how I get around anyhow. The rest of you should probably just walk.
Residents have access to all their daily needs within 5-minute walk neighbourhoods.
Most people will want to walk anyhow rather than risk getting stuck in the door of the Hyperloop. Ali Shahabi, one of the project's advisors, explained to the FT that Westerners don't necessarily get the project.
Look, I think you have to go beyond the glitz and the futuristic videos and the hyperbolic language that comes from Western consultants. And I think what Neom has failed to explain properly is that there is substance below this.
When asked if he would like to live at Neom, he replied,
I'm too old to live on the line. I think the line is going to attract Saudis in their 20s and 30s.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
I have to agree with Ali there. Getting on and off the Hyperloop within that 2-second window is a young man's game. You have to be in the prime of life to be able to handle the G-forces as it accelerates to Mach 3 and then slows to a full halt 412 times in a single 20-minute journey. It's not really for me either. The line is going to be a fairly busy city. 9 million people will be living on a footprint of just 34 square kilometres, which is 13 square miles. Manila in the Philippines has the world's highest population density with 119,600 people per square mile. Neom would have 686,000 people per square mile, which is almost six times the population density of Manila. I feel there would be a real sense of community there. The line is expected to be quite a place. In 2019, the Wall Street Journal reviewed 2,300 pages of documents put together by consultants at BCG, McKinsey, and Oliver Wyman. The consultants were directed by MBS to help turn his idea into a reality, and the documents highlight that the project is so ambitious that it incorporates many technologies that don't yet exist. There will be flying taxis, cloud seeding to make it rain in the desert, robot maids, which didn't exist at the time, but were since invented by Elon Musk. Scientists at Neom will work on a project to modify the human genome to make people stronger, which is surprising. There will be a robotic dinosaur park, which is probably safer than an actual dinosaur park. Robotic cage fighting. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of robots, and hopefully they won't start fights with the maids. A giant artificial moon will light up each night and live stream images from outer space, acting as an iconic landmark. But that's not all. Apparently the Crown Prince wants a beach that glows in the dark like the face of a watch. Who knows, maybe the radiation from this glowing sand can also modify the human genome, and that would kill two birds with the one stone, I suppose. Additionally, cameras, drones, and facial recognition technology will track everyone at all times, which sounds nice. These cameras could possibly be useful for keeping track of the people who, unlike me, are critical of the project. If I moved there, I wouldn't even have to make these videos. I could just be live streaming all the time. The Wall Street Journal piece says that Neom's reliance on foreign consultants reveals a sensitive challenge for the country, as Saudi Arabia historically lacked expertise in planning, engineering, and management. I'll tell you, there's no sign of a lack of those skills in this project plan. To me, the rest of the world appears to be lagging behind. I can't think of the last time I've watched a robot fighting on a beach where the sand is glowing like the face of a watch. Neom aims to have zero work or stress-related diseases, according to the documents, with residents all working at startups. While Neom is in the middle of the desert, it will have numerous farmers markets. I'm not sure how far the farmers will have to travel or if they'll come and go by Hyperloop. I'd worry a little bit about growing vegetables in the glow-in-the-dark sand, which otherwise sounds lovely. The plans detail how the city will have schools with classes taught by holographic teachers, which sounds like a bit of a disappointment when you have all of these robots kicking around, but okay. Look, there's just going to be a lot of tech at Neom.
Intelligent solutions create efficiency and year-round temperate microclimate with natural ventilation. Energy and water supplies are 100% renewable.
It's good that they've worked out the ventilation and water thing, as this is in the middle of the desert and Saudi Arabia, interestingly enough, has no permanent rivers or lakes and has very little rainfall. Neom's water needs will be provided by desalination plants. Neom will include an eight-sided buoyant city that will float on the Red Sea. It'll have its own judiciary system, entirely automated using AI. The line even has unveiled its own metaverse platform,
where you and those around you enter a new reality, transporting you to Mars one day and magical worlds the next, where your retail experience is completely reimagined.
There will be a digital asset marketplace for crypto and NFT trading and a mixed reality social media experience. It sounds great, right? The consultants allegedly worked on all of these ideas along with a plan for how local tribes would be forcibly relocated. According to The Guardian, Saudi authorities are accused of illegally displacing tribespeople in the region, often without adequate compensation, and of violently cracking down on those who peacefully oppose or resist eviction. They report that in 2020, a tribesman was shot dead after refusing to give up his land for the project, and that three tribesmen who live in the region today face execution after reportedly being arrested for resisting eviction. Another three were sentenced to between 27 and 50 years in prison.
It's virgin territory. It's a beautiful coast. There are some government buildings that have been built.
According to the Saudi Tourism Board, while tourism in Saudi Arabia was a pipe dream only a few years ago, ambitious projects like Neom and The Line will draw huge crowds to the country. I know that when I think of a good place to go on holiday, I always search for the most authoritarian, theocratic dictatorship in the world, especially when they've built a new city with cameras, drones and facial recognition technology to allow intelligence services to track everyone at all times to keep them safe. And I'm sure that you feel the same. Look, the best reason for building The Line, which should definitely be built in full, is not just that it's a great idea, but it's a really good deal. MBS negotiated a bargain price on this project. The line is going to be 500 metres tall, which is about the same height as Taipei 101, which was the tallest building in the world when it was built 20 years ago, at a cost of just under $2 billion. Taipei 101 is 75 metres wide, so you would need to build 13.3 of these for each kilometre. 2,270 of these buildings would equal just one wall of the line. For both city walls, you would need 4,540 Taipei 101s, and that's just the external walls. There's still all the inner buildings, the Hyperloop, the floating gardens, the autonomous flying pods, and the artificial moon. Let's not forget power plants, water desalination plants, airports, sewage treatment, human gene editing facilities, and everything else needed for a modern city. The line will have about half of the population of New York City and thus should require around 5,000 megawatts of power per day. It might need a lot more than that, as water desalination is very energy intensive, and being based in the desert, people might want to run their air conditioners most of the time. According to the New York Times, New York City requires hundreds of power plants to run, but gets around one third of its power from four nuclear power plants. Let's say the line is a very energy efficient city and can get by on one third of the power consumed by New York City. You would then need to build four or five nuclear power plants to supply that power. Synapse Energy estimates that each power plant would cost between $6 and $9 billion, so we're looking at $30 to $40 billion just for the power plants to supply electricity. Now, I'm not saying that they'll use nuclear power to generate electricity for NEOM. The plans just say that the source of power will have zero carbon impact, and it appears that they're looking at a mix of energy sources. Obviously, different sources of power have different costs, but bringing enough electricity online to power a city of 9 million people in a desert will be expensive. The 4,540 Taipei 101 buildings needed just as the exterior walls for the line would cost $9.1 trillion, assuming that construction costs have not gone up in 20 years, which they probably have. MBS was initially going to build all of this for $200 billion, which is less than 2% of the cost I've estimated for just the walls. This is an amazing deal, and no wonder everyone is excited about it, especially when the power plants alone could cost one-fifth of that. They've since upped the cost estimate to $500 billion, you know the way builders' estimates can be, but it's still quite a deal. Thunderfoot estimated the overall build cost of a city like this to be $100 trillion in a video that he made last year, which was more negative than this one. He's not an optimist like I am.
Well, look, another way. If we took the entire GDP of Saudi Arabia for about the next, say, for instance, 100 years, you might just be able to fund this.
I think that Thunderfoot is, of course, forgetting the huge increase in GDP that will come as Saudi Arabia transitions away from oil and gas and moves to all of these startups that the people will be working at. He's forgetting the sales of carbon neutral autonomous flying cars that they clearly show in their video. Tourism, where they're projecting that they'll attract more tourists per year than Paris by 2030. There's the NFT trading, the hologram teachers. With NEOM, Saudi Arabia's GDP, I think, can definitely be expected to grow significantly. The British architect, Peter Cook, who's working on the project, was asked about its feasibility last year. He said, "You know, I think that they'll get a bit of it done." He went on to describe the proposed 500 metre height as a bit stupid, saying that all of our engineer friends will tell you this. I'd like to be clear that I in no way agree with Peter. I think that the whole thing is a great idea and believe that the extreme height of the city is as necessary to the project as the fighting robots and the sand that glows like the face of a watch. These are all features of a modern, sustainable development that people want. NEOM is, without a doubt, the future of urban planning. Saudi Arabia's economy is today mostly driven by oil and gas, which account for 84% of exports and 42% of GDP. Saudi Arabians don't generally work in service jobs or do physical labour. They import foreigners to do that type of work. The country's often described as a neo-patrimonial rentier state, as due to the oil wealth, 66% of Saudi Arabians work for the government, and Saudi men working in the public sector, in contrast to the rest of the world, earn about twice as much as they would earn in the private sector. According to the civil service minister in 2016, many Saudi government employees really only work 1 hour per day. Under Mohammed bin Salman's Vision 2030 project, Saudi Arabia is aiming to diversify its economy away from fossil fuels and become a global hub for technology and innovation. Vision 2030 is not just mega projects like The Line. It calls for more women in the workforce, more investment, a focus on tourism, and better education to build a knowledge-based economy. According to Business Insider, Saudi Arabia's mega projects have grown so expensive that its oil wealth can no longer cover the cost. The country, they say, has resorted to borrowing and selling shares in the state oil company just to fund these projects. In 2020, Saudi Arabia tripled VAT from 5% to 15%, which some Saudis refer to as the NEOM tax. Critics of this project accuse the developers of NEOM of greenwashing or making grand promises about the environment that are not reflected in reality. MBS has announced that 50% of Saudi Arabia's electricity will be produced by renewable energy by 2030. With 6 years left to go, IEA figures show that only 0.1% of this has been achieved. Researchers at Schema Business School argue that construction of the line would generate about 1.8 gigatons of CO2. They say that while smart cities promise zero carbon thanks to new technologies, their construction, operation and supply requirements are so environmentally costly that it outweighs any carbon reduction that might be attained in the future. According to the researchers, most of the green claims being made by NEOM rely on technologies that do not yet exist. To highlight these contradictions, NEOM has been selected as the host of the 2029 Asian Winter Games, which required the construction of a ski slope in the desert. NEOM is not Saudi Arabia's first attempt at building new cities in the desert to diversify their economy away from oil. In 2005, a $30 billion project was announced to build six cities which were supposed to attract foreign investment, create more than 1 million jobs, and add $150 billion to GDP. Only one of the six cities was ever completed, King Abdullah Economic City, which today has a population of just 10,000 people compared to its target of 2 million people. Cynics will tell you that the only reason that it was even completed was because it carried the then king's name. I worry that this podcast has drifted in a somewhat negative direction, but all of that negativity is coming from other people, not from me. I think NEOM is a great idea. Thanks for tuning into this week's podcast, with a special thanks to our supporters on Patreon who make this podcast possible. Have a great week and talk to you again soon. Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Thank you to everyone who is supporting this content on Patreon. If you enjoyed this content, you can find more like it on YouTube, on the Patrick Boyle on Finance channel, or follow us on Twitter at Patrick E. Boyle. Thanks for listening. Bye.